I was reading an article last night in the ISKCON Communications Journal, and I found one sentence that I wanted to bring to your attention because it's something that you've studied. I'll just explain the topic of the article. Before I do that, though, this is an article called Religious Freedom and New Religious Movements in Europe. It's by Meru Devi Dasi. And in this article she examines some complex topics, the history and the implications of politics toward religious movements, new religious movements in Europe, specifically France. The French government is currently considering controversial new laws which many fear will curtail the rights of religious minorities. So she does a whole review of the last 10 years of responses and reactions to new religious movements in Europe, specifically France. And she pulls all kinds of stuff together, what other governments are doing, how the Vatican and other churches are responding to the possibility that France is going to pass some restrictive laws. And her footnotes include all kinds of documents that she found on the internet, all kinds of documents from the French legislature are referred to in this article. She did a huge amount of research, very, very difficult article to research and write, I would think. And then she wants to sum up her stance, and at the end she, in the very last paragraph where, you know, she's going to make her major points, she says, it will be interesting to see how other European countries respond to France's policies against new religious movements and how they interpret human rights in this context. Western Europe could go either way. It could become more restrictive or it could become more tolerant. Here's the sentence that contains the mistake. Not the mistake, but we talked about how one of the words that she uses here. A sensible approach might be for governments to set up a system of dialogue with all religious groups. So this is her point. She wants to make the point that a sensible approach would be for the governments to set up dialogue with all religious groups. France is not doing that. She makes it clear that France is definitely not doing that. It's avoiding doing that. So she's saying this is not sensible. And she uses the words, a sensible approach might be for governments to set up a system of dialogue with all religious groups. Now, could you make that sentence stronger based on what you know, what you've learned in this course? A sensible approach might be. We talked about might. That's the word I want to call your attention to. There's a stronger word. Yes, may. A sensible approach may be for governments that has a more grounded feeling behind it. It would give her point a little more weight. Might be, okay, it might be, it might not be. But if it may be, this may be the sensible approach. Okay. This is a very good journal. A lot of serious writing going on in this journal. You should read this. One duty of a good editor is to read a lot. He has to read a lot. Okay, you didn't miss much by being late if you're late. We just talked about one point in the ISKCON, one more point in ISKCON Communications Journal. Now we'll actually start the class. You were excused yesterday. You had more meetings, Pancha. Sick yesterday. Anyway, you were excused. We got up to about page 80 or 90 already. We on Friday we did 50 through 60. We did verbs, and I asked you to review that if you had time to read that. If you have any questions, you can ask about punctuation. That was about punctuation Friday. And then there was the Random House Guide to Good Writing. There was about 10 pages of a review of some principles that we've studied the last 2 weeks and some extension of those principles into what makes for good writing, with the idea to show you that what you could learn from that Random House Guide section is some tips on how to edit or how to recognize writing that is better than other writing. He gives some examples, some practical examples of how to combine sentences so that they read better than they would if they weren't combined in a certain way. Then yesterday we went through some miscellaneous notes, starting around pages 71, 72, 73. And we got through the ISKCON style sheet and the BTG style sheet. I want to refer back to one page of the miscellaneous notes. We're going to go on today talking about the BTG a little more, but I'd like to make a correction on page 74 of your miscellaneous notes. I made a mistake that I'd like to correct here. Under the section called capital letters, the first guideline is capitalize the word after a comma that introduces a question. So you should have a sentence that reads, the question is, comma, do you do it with a capital D? Some question has to be there. What is there now is the answer is do it. But there should be some question there introduced. The question is, comma, it can be any question. The question is, comma, do you do it? Whatever question you want to ask after the comma is all right, but the first letter should be capitalized. The question is, sometimes you'll find this in your editing, you have to write, the writer has written, the question is, and you have to know that that takes a comma, and then the next word begins with a capital letter, with the question. The question is it Thursday, or will it be on Thursday or Friday? Capital W, whatever the question is. The question is, comma, capital letter. So that's how you do that. Then with the answer is, comma, do it. You could have that in lowercase if you wanted, I suppose. There's a question mark after that, yeah. There's no quotation marks around the question. And the answer, yeah. Huh? Capital D, yeah. If there's a question within the sentence, that's how you can do it. The answer is do it. I would actually make that lowercase d, depending on the context. So that was my mistake. There's also a typo under the section called compare. The last line of the section on compare, one knows one has inside oneself, should be an e there in the word oneself. The section compare, I want to add to it also. Let's read it through. Compare to is for bringing out similarities. Lord Krishna's feet are compared to lotus flowers. To bring out similarities and differences, we compare with or compare to. Compare with is the more common. That's the additional information that I found yesterday. Compare with is the more common expression. And I gave you this long example by John Updike. But here's another shorter example of compared with. Compared with Krishna Das, Dhanavir is smart. It couldn't be any quality. Compared with Krishna Das, Dhanavir is humble. Compared with Krishna Das, Dhanavir is... Two things are being compared for difference, not a similarity. But sometimes compared to is also used for difference compared to last year. Please turn to page 83. These are the lists. This is the list of points that was brought together in the book Edit Yourself. The first one had to do with style sheets. Check all your spelling, hyphens, capitals, numbers, and important names and terms against your style sheet. So yesterday I showed you what a style sheet is for ISKCON and also for Back to Godhead. Today I want to look at two more of these, or at least one more. Let's just go with one more first. This is the fourth one from the bottom. Check that all introductory clauses beginning with an ing word relate to what immediately follows. So this gets us into the subject called danglers. If you have an ing word that isn't related to what immediately follows, you have what's called a dangling participle or a dangler. Mrs. O'Connor writes, always suspect an ing word of dangling if it's near the front of the sentence. To find out ask yourself who's doing it. Who's doing the walking, the talking, the singing, or whatever it is in the ing word. You may be surprised by the answer. So here's some examples. After overeating, the bed looked pretty good to the devotee. After overeating, the bed looked pretty good to the devotee. He thought he would take some rest. Who ate too much in this sentence? The bed. Who ate too much in this sentence? The bed. After overeating, the bed looked pretty good to the devotee. But if the devotee did the overeating, the opening ing phrase should be attached to him. After overeating, the devotee thought the bed looked pretty good. Another example. On returning home, Maxine's phone rang. Who came home? Maxine's phone. To show that the owner of the phone was doing the returning, put her right after the opening phrase. On returning home, Maxine heard the phone ring. Another one, last one. Walking briskly, the belt of her raincoat was lost. Who's the pedestrian? The belt. What's attached to the opening phrase is what's doing the walking. If you want to say she was walking briskly, put her right after the opening phrase. Walking briskly, she lost the belt of her raincoat. Not walking briskly, the belt of her raincoat was lost. This happens a lot. And it happens in other ways also, not just with ing words. There's a whole chapter about these danglers in this book. But it's short. It's only 4, 5, 6 pages long. Some of you have expressed some interest in getting photocopies of this book because it's been used a lot in this course and you think that you'll have use for it. So I think at the end of the course, we'll make it available. We'll take it to Delhi and photocopy it for as many devotees as would like to pay for it because there's good stuff in it. Here's an example of a dangler that doesn't use an ing phrase. Born at the age of 43, the baby was a great comfort to his mother. As the sentence is arranged, the baby, not his mother, was 43. The opening phrase, born at the age of 43, is attached to the baby, so that's what it describes. Here's one way to rearrange things. The baby, born when his mother was 43, was a great comfort to her. Now I'll give you one from Back to Godhead. Okay, this is in a paragraph that goes like this. Anukaran and I, Anukaran is somebody's name, and I found ourselves on our motorcycles riding downhill toward the Kund. Finding a shady spot, we pulled over. There's a case where the sentence begins with an ing phrase. Finding a shady spot, we pulled over. So that's okay. He used it right there. The noonday sun overhead told me it was time for Gayatri meditation. Here's the sentence with the dangler. After a dip in the water and prayers, the silence was broken when Anukaran said, and then he said something. So the sentence begins, after a dip and prayers, that means the devotee is taking a dip in the prayers. But that's not, this phrase is not attached to the devotee. It's attached to the silence. After a dip and prayers, the silence was broken. After bathed. Well, after a dip and prayers, Anukaran said, after a dip and prayers, Anukaran broke the silence by saying, that's how it should read, after a dip in prayers should be attached to the person who took the dip and who said the prayers. But it's attached wrongly to the silence. After a dip in prayers, the silence was broken by Anukaran. Yes, after a dip in prayers, Anukaran broke the silence. Okay, so danglers are there. You got to look out for them. Does everybody have experience with danglers? Have you ever experienced a dangler? Yes. Have you ever, in your own writing or reading, experienced a dangler? Here's another example. Dumpy and overweight. The vet says our dog needs more exercise. Dumpy and overweight. The vet says our dog needs more exercise. Should be dumpy and overweight. Our dog needs more exercise, the vet says. Miraculously, we watched as the surgeon operated with his knife. That's incorrect, because miraculously is attached to we. Miraculously, we watched as the surgeon operated with his knife. Should be, miraculously, the surgeon operated with his knife as we watched. Or, we watched as the surgeon miraculously operated with his knife. At the age of 10, my father bought me a puppy. Dad was only a boy. At the age of 10, I got a puppy from my father. So you got to look out for these. Now, there's more mistakes in Bhaktagata that I wanted to point out. Who's doing what's described at the beginning? Yeah. That's how she tells you to look out for who's doing what's described there. Who's the person that did it? You have to be a detective. You have to find out who did it. And then attach whatever was done to who did it. Okay, just to go on a little bit with the discussion of style sheets and back to Godhead. I suggest that when you get back to Godhead, you go through it, or any good ISKCON magazine, ISKCON communications journal, whatever you have, look for mistakes. See if you can find editing mistakes. And usually you can. This is a nice article about a devotee who took a ride on a motorcycle with this fellow here, his friend, in some part of India. Where was it? He's a Sikh, and they went to some place. I'm not sure which part. Gujarat, maybe, or. And they rode their motorcycles to this place. So the first thing is that a lot of attention is called to the motorcycles in the lead-in. This is a lead-in where. Right under the title, you have something describing what the article is about. That's called a lead-in. right there, the attention is called to the motorcycles. An American disciple of Srila Prabhupada, not Srila Prabhupada's, and his Indian Sikh friend ride their classic motorcycles to an ancient hilltop shrine. The same thing, it's a big, you know, it's trying to catch the reader's interest. It's used on the contents page. On classic motorcycles, an American devotee of Krishna and his Sikh friend cruise to an ancient holy site. You know, you're supposed to get really fired up about these motorcycles. So much so that, you know, you're supposed to recognize something special about them. They're called classic motorcycles. Well, I don't have a clue what a classic motorcycle is. I have no idea what is the difference between a classic and a non-classic motorcycle. And I think to find out, I'd have to write a letter to the editor because it's not explained in the magazine. So it's just some jargon. Just some jargon that, you know, it makes sense to people who use motorcycles. And it's used three places, in two prominent places, and then again in the article. Okay, that's the first point. What do you think of this title? Ramangiri, Ramagiri, the hill of Ram, the ride to Ramangiri. Which ride? Our ride, yeah. Why is it the ride? And what reason did they have to make it the ride? One at a time, huh? It attracts. Why does it attract more than ah? Emphasis. Okay, Arvind? The ride, yeah, the ride. All right. So something about it, they made them decide on the ride rather than a ride. Yeah, right, right. Yeah. Yeah, it's more oomph, yeah. That's right. Okay, this article begins here. The way things are laid out, you've got a picture here, and the caption is here describing the picture and this big picture. And then here's the beginning of the text. Does anybody know what this is called when you make the first letter? What is it? Again? Drop it down. It's a drop down letter. Another name? Drop cap. Another name? Initial cap. First letter cap. And it's very good. It catches the eye. It sends the eye right to where you want it to go. But there's a problem here because the first sentence starts out with somebody saying something. The author is speaking, and he's speaking, I first saw Ramagiri. He tells when he first saw Ramagiri. So he's quoting. He's using dialogue. He's using dialogue in quotation marks. Where are the quotation marks? There are no quotation marks before I, but they come at the end of the sentence. So there's a big oversight. Yeah, they should have big quotation marks to the left. Yeah. How can they avoid it? It's the first thing, and it has to also be big. It tells the reader that somebody's speaking. And then another thing that BTG has a problem with is the second line. Whenever they have a drop cap, the second line is not justified. Their system that they use doesn't justify the second line. It's indented a little bit. And you'll find the same thing on Prabhupada's one other article, some other article I saw. It's not just here. It's every magazine, when they use this, it's the same problem. They haven't been able to fix it. Strange. It worked okay when I worked it back to Godhead, but things have changed. Okay, now here's some inconsistency. I found an inconsistency. The text, of course, talks a lot about this fort. You know, big picture at the beginning, you expect the text to say something about this fort. So one thing it tells you is in the text itself, and another thing is in the caption. It mentions it twice. But the information is not the same exactly. The text says the fort was built several centuries ago. So you think several means three or four, maybe 1600. The caption says the text was built many centuries ago. How many is many? Five, ten? So you have no idea when the thing was actually put up. Okay. Then there's a sidebar about the power of Ram's name, the power of chanting Ram's name. And in here there's the story told about that little creature that wanted to move a pebble into the bridge that was being built over the ocean. A pebble one. And Hanuman said, why don't you get out of the way? And Ram came and said, no, no, don't tell him that. He's doing whatever he can. So that creature in this sidebar is identified as a squirrel. That's okay. Some people say it was a squirrel, a little squirrel. But in other places, you've probably heard that it's a spider, right? Okay. Fair enough. Okay, there's different ways of talking about it. But BTG happens to have a letter from to the editor describing the pebbles of service that one can contribute in devotional service, and identifies this same character as a spider. So he's a spider on page 5, and he's a squirrel on page... No, no, it's just a letter about a previous article and how it reminded him of some... Well, shouldn't BTG make it consistent or explain the inconsistency? Could they edit the letter? Could they edit the letter to make it consistent? Could they set a standard on their style sheet? Whenever we refer to this creature, it will be a squirrel. It will not be, huh? Make a correction in the text, like. Well, yeah, you have to. First of all, you have to determine what's right. What is going to be your standard of what's right, and then you're going to have to put it on your style sheet. Whenever we mention this, it's going to be this. Yeah, they could mention three. What about that? Yeah, there could be some explanation. And you were going to say? Yeah, they could reply. Yeah. No, maybe not. Maybe not. I wouldn't probably do it either. The letters say it's a spider, and the article says it's a squirrel. They don't refer to each other, but they show up in the same magazine. So who wrote the author?
The author.
Yeah. So you could ask the author of the article, can we change it so that it's consistent, or what do you want to do? BTG should know this. They're supposed to be. Okay, here's something I don't think is right. Surya Narayan is mentioned. That's the Narayan who is the sun god. There's one incarnation of Narayan who's the sun god, Surya Narayan. And in case you didn't know, then BTG is giving you an explanation in parentheses. The sun incarnation of Vishnu. Okay? But sun is capitalized. The sun, capital S, incarnation of Vishnu. Yeah, that's a good question. When they have the boar incarnation, do they capitalize boar? Do they capitalize turtle? So you have to look up. You have to refer to what we do in other similar cases. Yes. So is the earth. Sometime, when do you capitalize the earth? Do you say Mother Earth when it's personified? Do you capitalize earth? These are all questions that you have to settle when you are editing. You have to settle these questions and make a style sheet and know what you're doing. So maybe BTG has a reason for capitalizing the sun. Maybe because they figured it's in the same category as boar incarnation. I'm not sure. Or it could have been just a mistake. Here's another inconsistency. Here in the masthead of the magazine, you're told that if you want to write to BTG by email, you should write to this address. And the email thing is given as this. In the same masthead, you have email cap E, and two paragraphs down, you have email with a small e. Both are correct, so you can use them interchangeably. Well, consistency is the mark of small minds. What about this? Is this a redundancy? Is it redundant? That's what I thought. I thought it was a redundancy. Okay, let's go on. I usually do this with the Back to Godhead. Well, I never saw some place I never saw. I never saw Ahmedabad. I have never seen Ahmedabad. I've never before seen Ahmedabad. The same point. It doesn't change the point. It's just an extra word. Eh? If I go there and then I say, I've never seen this before, then you can say it. Yes. Then the time element enters into it. Okay, let's go on to page 88, please. These are cliches to avoid. You could spell it with diacritics or without, or with a B or with a V. Yeah. They'd use Vrindavan with diacritics. That's mentioned on the BTG style sheet. If you look at the BTG style sheet, you'll see that they use diacritics only on four holy cities: Mayapur, Navadvip, Vrindavan, and Dwarka. And Jagannath Puri, they just use the map name. Ayodhya, they use the map name. So they just made a cutoff point. They said, we're going to cut it off here. We're just going to refer to these four holy dhams with diacritics. That's all. Words are in the dictionary. Yes, Romanized Sanskrit words, yeah. They're using them. They're putting them in Roman type, and they're not using diacritics on them? Yeah, okay. So they're not even using diacritics on a lot of them. On that list, though, yeah. On the list there, the two words Maya and Samsara are on the list, but I don't think they should be, because in this magazine I found them to be in italics with diacritics. Maya and Samsara are in italics with diacritics, so they shouldn't be on that list. Okay, cliches. I heard a few cliches in the last few days just by keeping my ears open. I even used one. I used the one broad daylight. I asked Dhananjay if he wanted to catch somebody picking flowers in broad daylight. And he said, who's that? He sent his assistant out to see who it was, and they caught him. But broad daylight's not on this list. It's mentioned in a list here in Patricia O'Connor's book. She has 8 pages of cliches. Another good reason to copy her book. I was saying to the devotees that whoever wants, we can make a copy of this book for. Whoever wants this book, we can copy it. Instead of cliches. Yeah, that's always the question. She says there's no way to eliminate all cliches. It would take a room full of Shakespeare's to replace them with fresh figures of speech. And before long, these would become cliches too. Vivid language is recycled precisely because it's vivid. We think of cliches as the familiar mustard and ketchup and relish of language. We use them like of course that's referring to eating meat. But she says we use these things like we use mustard and ketchup. You don't put it on everything. Some dishes, it tastes good on some not. So we shouldn't overwork these cliches. If a phrase sounds good and lively and nothing else will do, okay, use it. If it sounds flat, be merciless. Just cut it out. Get rid of it. Let your ear be your guide. On this list on page 88, under H, there's an ISKCON cliche. A higher taste. What? Why is it a cliche? Well, because everybody talks about getting a higher taste. And it's overused. What is a cliche? In the beginning, when it was used, it sounded beautiful or lively. A higher taste, we'll get a higher taste. It sounded like such a nice thing. And everybody liked it and remembered it and repeated it, and it got worn out. It's just worn out. It's worked to death. Well, maybe it's not dead yet, but that's how it goes with cliches. And so some of them get so worked to death that they deserve to die. You should just give them a death sentence and forget about them. So look at some of these that are on this list. What does imbibe mean? To take inside. To take in. Absorb. So if somebody, imbibed, you might be on the lookout for it. And when you're doing some editing, you might, consider it maybe worth getting rid of or replacing. Why? Who said why? Well, you have to consider whether it's been overworked. Maybe in devotee circles it's been overworked. Maybe not. I imbibe the philosophy. Does that sound good? Assimilate's also almost a cliche. Yeah, cliches to use. Non-cliches. Non-cliches to use. So we're in the eyes. Inevitable death. Inevitable death. Impending doom. Impact. As a verb. Okay, why don't we do this? Have a little participation. Why don't we do some reading? You read half a column, then you read half a column, you read half a column. Just run through it. It'll take a couple minutes. Yes. Good place to begin. 99% of the world's population today. Yes. Acutely aware. Acutely aware. Annals. Annals of history. The records. That means the records of history. Continue? Yeah, do half a column. A quick retreat, a hasty retreat. Bite the dust means you bite the dust means you die. You what? No, you bite the dust means you're finished. I'm finished. I bit the dust, I'm finished. It's almost like being dead. Okay, I'll read a few up to D from Patricia O'Connor. Acid test. Agree to disagree. Back to the drawing board. The ball is in your court. Beat a dead horse. Bite the bullet. Bitter end. Blanket of snow. She says nature is good for a lot of cliches. There's blankets of snow, sheets of rain, calm before the storm, devastating earthquakes, raging torrents, bolts from the blue, steaming jungles, uncharted seas, wide open spaces, places in the sun, silhouetted against the sky. So many. Blessing in disguise. That one is also on that list. Boggles the mind. A bone of contention. Bored to tears. Bottom line. Broad daylight. Brute force. A bug going around. By hook or by crook. Srila Prabhupada said that. By hook or by crook, get them to take a book. Can of worms. Can't see the forest for the trees. Come to a head. Cool as a cucumber. Cutting edge. It's no longer sharp. She says, days are numbered. Dead as a doornail. A diamond in the rough. Discreet silence. So silent that you can hear a pin drop. Draw a blank. This is what you do when you run out of cliches. You draw a blank. Each and every. One and the same. Any and all. Easier said than done. Errand, oh, I'm on the ease. Errand of mercy. Okay, that's it for the ease. Majwala, you read F and G and H a little bit. Read a little bit. Please. There's a nature cliche. The fertile soil of nature comes from nature, this cliche. A gamut is a whole range of things, and when you run the gamut, then you run out of things. Here's what she says about heated argument. She says, what better kind of argument is there? But she says, go easy on this expression, don't overuse it. Heated controversy, heated argument. Here's one under the F's and G's. We have generation gap, get nowhere fast, get the show on the road. Grind to a halt. Far be it from me. Few and far between. Food for thought. Fools rush in. Foregone conclusion. Foreseeable future. Okay, and the H's, Adi Purush. Read about half a column, okay? Please. Well, that shows up in the back of our BBT books now. Someone got the bright idea. I think somebody in England got the bright idea to put at the back of our books the Hare Krishna lifestyle or something like that. The lifestyle of a devotee. And it tells you all about how you can start chanting Hare Krishna at home, set up an altar and offer your food and take up devotional service. Instead of the index, instead of putting the index in the book, which would allow you to, you know, have some references to the contents of the book. If you wanted to make a scholarly study of the book, an index is helpful. They decided that it's better to try to indoctrinate people or teach them Krishna consciousness at home. So they put the devotee lifestyle at the back of the book. It's actually called that. It's something like that. But that's, so then the question came up. Jayadvaita Maharaj raised the question, okay, if you're going to have that in the back of the book, okay, but let's not call it a lifestyle. He said, a devotee doesn't have a lifestyle. A lifestyle is something that people in the material world have. He said, call it the life of a devotee or something like that. And that's the point. It's it's a mundane word. It's a word describing mundane life. That was his argument. Yeah, he doesn't distinguish between. There could be a correct use of it. Yeah. It becomes a cliche when it's used, just because it sounds good and it sounds like it's vivid, and then you overwork it, and you apply it too often. The sacred life of a devotee, the sacred lifestyle. Yeah, it's his style. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is not a fashion, so just to have a lifestyle. Huh? Here's another cliche from nature. Impenetrable fog, now I'm in the eyes. In the nick of time, innocent bystander. It goes without saying. Last but not least, that's on this sheet too. There's lifestyle on your sheet, lifestyle. Leaps and bounds. Legendary. I just saw this in the newspaper referring to a singer named Asha Bhosle. They had big advertisements saying the legendary Asha Bhosle is going to be singing at such and such a place. I happened to meet her once. She sang at a concert for the Hong Kong temple. She gave a big concert and the proceeds were donated to ISKCON. So we think she is quite a legend. So it's okay. The legendary Asha Bhosle. Okay, who would like to read L's, M's, N's? Arvind. Okay, I'll read a few. It's something that's going to blow up. It's a potential explosion. Make a killing. Mass exodus. A meaningful dialogue. This was a dumb expression to begin with. Drop meaningful. In fact, dialogue is pretty dumb too. Don't people have talks anymore? Moment of truth. More than meets the eye. Nip in the bud. Nip it in the bud. Pandora's box. Passed away. She says, you've probably noticed that death is a favorite playground of cliches. This is too bad. In situations where people most need sincerity, what do they get? Denial. There's no shame in saying somebody died, but the vocabulary of mortality avoids it. Think again before using expressions like passed away or passed on. Untimely end. Cut down in his prime. Called to his maker. Called away. The great beyond. This mortal coil. Kicked the bucket. Gone to a better place. Checked out. The grim reaper in the midst of life. Irreparable loss. Broke the mold. Veil of tears. Time heals all. Words can't express. Tower of strength. And he looks like he's sleeping. Attain the Ganga. Oh, that's a good one. It might be. It's worth writing down. Attain the Ganga. The other one I heard was he went to Vrindavan without buying a ticket. Okay, Kavi, would you please read? Kavi Karnapur Prabhu, please read the P's. No, R's. Okay, here's some more. Under P, play hardball. This is an expression that has edged out no more Mr. Nice Guy. These are American. If you say no more Mr. Nice Guy means now we're going to get tough. So this has been replaced now by play hardball. We're going to play hardball. Play it by ear. Political hopefuls. Powers that be. Pre-existing condition. This is a redundancy. It repeats itself. Pre-existing condition. Like end result, final outcome, new initiative, close proximity. These are all redundancies. End result, a result comes at the end. A final outcome, an outcome is final, and so it comes at the end. New initiative, initiative means something new. Close proximity means already one thing, proximity. Pushing the envelope, this was another cliche. It appeared about 5 years ago. It's already sounding worn out. Pushing the envelope. Reliable source. Roller coaster. Sadder but wiser. She likes that one, but the sea of faces. Bright and shining faces. Seriously consider. Shattered with grief. A sickening thud. Sickening thud. Okay, Punch, would you read? Yeah, here's a couple more. A tarnished image. A team player. Everybody wants to be a team player in ISKCON these days. Thick as thieves. Tip of the iceberg. Tongue in cheek. Trust implicitly. We have that. There's one verse, you know, where we say we should trust the spiritual master implicitly. Trust implicitly. So it's also a cliche, or it's a expression people use. You can trust me implicitly. You can trust me implicitly. Up in the air. viable alternative. She says about viable alternative, at least it beats the alternative that doesn't work. A viable alternative at least works. War-torn. It's a war-torn city. This cliche stays alive because there are always enough wars to go around. What makes him tick? Okay, and finally she talks about some metaphors. She makes a pun. I'll show you the pun. There's a saying, "May the Force be with you." It's from the Star Wars movie. So she played around with that and got, "May the Force be with you." Okay, that's the cliches. Tomorrow we're going to talk about idioms. Idioms are on page 89. We're going to continue next few pages in the material, whatever it is. Try and read the article that's coming up. What page is the article?